You're listening to the Whole Hog Football Podcast, sponsored by Bud Anderson Home Services. Every Monday through Friday during the Razorbacks football training camp, bringing you the latest news, position analysis, and more. Here's your hosts, Matt Jones and Scotty Bordelon.
If you're a college football fan, it's a big time of the year. Preseason practice begins across the country today on campuses all over the place, including here in Fayetteville, where the Razorbacks are going to go through their or begin their second year of preseason practice under Sam Pittman. Really their first year, though, of what we would kind of consider normal preseason practice. Of course, last year was so different leading up to the football season with all the different things that they had to do in the preseason. There wasn't that typical preseason camp that we were used to. And so we'll get a chance to see Sam Pittman's group on Friday afternoon for the first time in year two. A lot of question marks, I think, going into the preseason this year. And on today's episode of the Whole Hog Football Podcast, we're going to talk about just kind of, we're going to kind of set the table for you, if you will. Leading into the preseason, what are some of the storylines to watch? What are some of the positions to watch? And I'm joined today by Scotty Bordelon and Clay Henry, the publisher of Hogs Illustrated. And guys, you know, what stands out to me, I think, as we go into this, a lot of times, you know, when we're going into the preseason, we're talking about starting position battles. And because of there was such a young roster last year in the first place, and then you've got COVID and the extra year that is afforded because of that, I think there's 19 starters back or 19 players who have got starting experience back on this team. It doesn't feel this year like we're talking about starting battles as much as we are talking about depth. Who's going to fill in behind these guys? It's just kind of a different feeling, Clay.
I think you're right, Matt. And I think there's probably some starting battles in the defensive line because guys that are returning starters will be pushed by some guys that came in through the transfer portal like Markell Utsi and John Ridgeway and Trey Williams. I suspect those guys, they were starters elsewhere, and I'd be a surprise if they didn't push for starting assignments. So there's some real battles there, but not so much in a lot of other places. Maybe cornerback, where they want there to be battles, and truth be told, they're going to probably play four corners this year, and maybe one of those will be a backup at nickel. The true backups are probably trying to fight off some young players to stay in the two deep.
Scotty, that defensive line is something that you wrote about yesterday.
Yeah, the defensive line is super intriguing to me because, you know, we asked Sam Pittman fielded a couple of questions about the defensive line, and, you know, he rattled off his starters pretty quick. Eric Gregory, or who might be his starters day one, was Eric Gregory, Isaiah Nichols, Jashad Stewart, and Zach Williams. You know, those are a lot of names that we heard in the spring. I think Eric Gregory is a guy that a lot of people are excited about. Like, he's the team's leading returning tackler in terms of guys that play up front. So he rattled off those names, you know, really without hesitation. But you've got some other guys, like, you can't forget about, you know, Dorian Gerald, Mateo Soli, some of those guys. And then Clay mentioned the three portal additions. I'm really intrigued to see what Trey Williams brings. If he's a guy that, you know, can help them, you know, get more comfortable in a four down, maybe he's a guy who stands up maybe on the edge. And John Ridgeway, I remember I reached out to an Illinois State writer during the summer. He's kind of an edgy physical tackle that, you know, I think can plug some holes and kind of create some havoc, because they've got to create some havoc up front and, you know, not only improve on that yards per rush allowed number, but just, you know, get opposing offenses, you know, behind the chains. Like, you can't live as a defense second and five, second and six. Like, you need to create some negative plays. I think they've got some quality depth up front. I don't think those starters are set in stone, because I think there's lots of guys with potential. And I didn't even mention Torian Carter either. He's a guy I'm excited about too.
When you look at what they lost there, Jonathan Marshall, he was a guy that demanded double teams. And the significant part of that is that it freed up Grant Marshall, who played behind him, to never really have a blocker on him. So that's an early thing to watch, Rice, Texas, you know, as we're getting into the season, does Ridgeway or Nichols provide that kind of pressure on the defense for the defense where an offensive guard and a center have to worry about getting thrown back in the backfield like Jonathan Marshall did. So it, you know, that with all that returning talent that they have, that's a big loss, and they've got to figure out if they're okay there, if it's a positive, or it even falls back to a negative, and that they don't have that bell cow in the middle of the defense.
On the other side of the ball, I think one of the things I'm really interested to watch is that receiver, you know, who steps up behind Treylon Burks. You look at all these preseason lists that are coming out right now. Seems like he's kind of the, you know, the popular pick, as people are saying, you know, he's the best receiver in the SEC. I know Pro Football Focus said something the other day about, you know, he looks like a first round pick in next year's NFL draft. But as you listen to Sam Pittman talk during his, you know, his first meeting with the media ahead of the preseason, he said they want to have nine receivers. You need to have nine receivers in order to play in the SEC. And you think about this team a year ago, it was mostly Treylon Burks and Mike Woods, who's gone to Oklahoma now, and, you know, Davion Warren at times before he got injured. And Sam Pittman said that he's going to be cleared and able to practice, you know, coming off that ACL injury. But you always wonder how players are coming off ACLs. I think there's a lot of intrigue around the receiver position. You know, who's going to step up behind Treylon Burks?
Yeah, it could be, you know, it could be Trey Knox has a breakthrough year, and we just really haven't seen a whole lot from him. But, you know, I think that there were a lot of issues last year that kind of weighed on him, had severe asthma, you know, the COVID situation, you know, probably got to him a little bit. Is he a guy that can be an every down player and make plays both blocking and getting off the line of scrimmage? You know, he just never seemed to be consistent in busting loose from, you know, press coverage, and that was the way to handle him. I look for John David White to kind of have a breakthrough year, and, you know, maybe when you look at him in street clothes, you know, he's unimposing, but he sure has a vertical stretch to him that would belie his stature, and doesn't seem to drop passes, seems to get his man walled off in blocking assignments. He's one of those nine for sure that maybe we don't appreciate enough. I know Sam Pittman appreciates him.
John David White kind of reminds me of a Drew Morgan. You remember Drew Morgan for probably 2 years before he had his breakout season. It seemed like he was a practice all-star, and you just kept wondering, when is this going to, you know, get into a game? And that kind of feels like that's what we've seen from John David White, Scotty. Every time, you know, that we watch a practice, it seems like, you know, he has one of the highlights of the practice, a 35-yard catch, you know, something really acrobatic. He's been a very good practice player for them, and eventually you think that's going to carry over into a game.
Yeah, and his teammates nicknamed him Diesel, so I think there's going to be a place for him in that receiver rotation. I remember he had a really good spring game, and someone asked Sam, you know, does John David White have a spot, you know, in your rotation as of right now? And he said he did. And I just remember watching him in the spring, and remember it was quarterbacks throwing to receivers on the perimeter and, you know, trying to get the other receivers on that same side of the field to, you know, kind of create a wall for the pass catcher. And the kid got some real wiggle to him. And I was watching, I think it was Arkansas-Tennessee highlights just on YouTube randomly the other day, and John David White's out there. I think he's a real threat to get some quality playing time this year. Something else I'm looking for is can Davion Warren get anywhere close to where he was last year? You know, just coming off an ACL injury, that's probably going to be in the back of his mind a lot when he touches the field. But if he can give them some quality production, maybe give Treylon Burks a little bit of breathing room, maybe draw some defenders away from Treylon Burks, that would be pretty important. And can one of those young guys emerge? Like, is it Ketron Jackson, Bryce Stevens? You know, he wasn't here in the spring, so he's kind of getting, you know, antiquated to, or he's getting introduced to college ball now. can one of those guys kind of emerge and fill one of those roles? That's something to keep an eye on, I think.
Quaylen Crawford, another one that I'm interested
in.
Tyson Morris wasn't around just a lot in the spring either. I think he had an injury. So several guys that are coming back from injuries that, you know, they have shown that they can produce a little bit in the past, but I think they need a little bit more from several guys.
One of the other things that's interesting to me as we go into the preseason is that it really gives us, I think, our first chance to see up close what a Sam Pittman, you know, practice is like. And here's what I mean by that. Last year, you guys were out there. When we would go, they basically, because of COVID, you know, restrictions, precautions, whatever you want to call them, they had you boxed off. You sat, you know, you stood in your 6-foot box and, you know, someone stood a certain amount away from you. And, you know, I remember Clay, maybe on the first day of practice or one of the first days of practice that you went out there, you were what position close to the defensive line. And so that's what you wrote about, you know, that's what you were able to focus on. It's a little bit different this year for us. We're able to roam around the field, kind of, you know, see these coaches in action, maybe a little bit more up close than we were able to a year ago. And then also, you know, you've got 5 new coaches this year: Kenny Guyton, Michael Scherer, Cody Kennedy, Jermile Ashley, Dow Loggins, who comes in from, you know, a longtime NFL background. It'll be interesting to see how these coaches interact with the players, what their coaching styles are like up close and personal.
Yeah, I got tickled yesterday. Sam said our coaching staff, it's like a fairy tale. And I was like, okay, I don't know whether I've ever heard a staff chemistry described as fairy tale, but he likes what he's got. You know, he made a lot of changes. Some of them were unforced. Brad Davis left on his own, but the rest of it, it's pretty much on him. And I know he did some of it for recruiting. Now we get to see, you know, what these guys' real ability is to coach. And, you know, I think the one I'll probably focus on today is offensive line with Cody Kennedy. I've heard a lot of good things about him. Watched him coach tight ends, but I think this is really where he's in his element, coaching offensive line. And he's, you know, he's a Pittman clone, just like Brad Davis is. But I've always thought the SEC is about what you are in the offensive line and defensive line. So Kennedy's ability to really take this offensive line group that's got some starting experience to the next level, and then Ashley's ability to mesh into what they're doing with the 4-man front in Barry Odom's defense with all of these guys in determining a rotation. You know, we talked about starters and defensive line, they're going to play 8 to 10. And I think they've got that many. So that will be the two things that I watched today.
Yeah, and I'm kind of with Clay. Like, one of the things that's really stood out when we watched practice in the spring is we got a little bit of extended time in the spring. Like, we sometimes stayed up to close to an hour. And it was every day the authoritative voice on that field was Brad Davis. And so I'm curious, is Cody Kennedy going to be that authoritative voice that it doesn't matter which field you're on, you can still hear him. And I think he probably will be, because I remember at certain points last year, the tight ends were at the far end from the gate on the turf field. Cody Kennedy's down there working with tight ends, and you can hear every word he's saying. And it's just to a few guys. And I think he'll do a pretty good job with the offensive line. And me being a young guy, not super, super familiar with Dow Loggins. So how he interacts with his players, how he coaches them on the field, kind of his demeanor, the vibe you get from him, that's going to be what I'm looking for. Because that tight end position is pretty thin. They've only got 2 guys that really have a lick of experience. So they've got so Sam Pittman talked about the importance of, you know, he wants to play some 12 personnel. He's got 2 tight ends, but you figure you probably need more than 2 to get through this season, especially an SEC schedule. So you got to bring another guy or 2 along. Dow Loggins, I think he's got his work cut out for him, but, you know, I think he'll handle it well.
It's interesting you said the thing about the voice, Scott. Yeah, I remember back to it was shortly after Sam was hired. He was speaking at the summit luncheon up at Cross Church in Pinnacle Hills, and he was asked, what do you look for when you're hiring assistant coaches? And he said, our voice is the most powerful thing we have. He said, when I hire coaches, I want to hire men who understand the power of their voice. We wanted to be loud when they do something well. We want to teach them when they need teaching. And so he said that that's one of the things that, you know, he really looks for. So it was interesting to hear you say that.
That I've heard Sam mention that about five times, and the ability to use your voice to encourage. And he said, the critical aspect of that is to encourage when it's something that needs to be encouraged. In other words, it can't be the wrong thing, because if you emphasize and praise the wrong thing, then that's what you're going to get on game day. So the talent of a coach is to pick out the good between the bad, praise the good, correct the bad. And we'll see if these new coaches are able to do that and satisfy their head coach.
I don't know if you can have a preseason football practice or a podcast without talking about the quarterbacks. So let's talk about the quarterback situation here real quick. KJ Jefferson, he is the assumed starter. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I wrote in our preseason magazine that he had more pass attempts in his start at Missouri last year than the rest of the quarterbacks on the roster have in their entire careers combined. So even though KJ Jefferson's not very experienced, he does have the most experience by a long shot over the other quarterbacks on the roster. It seems to me, though, that, you know, kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier, this preseason is going to be about, you know, identifying depth. You know, who's your number two quarterback? Who's your number three quarterback? Clay, you wrote this week, who's your number two running back? It feels like, you know, identifying those players behind the players who we know are going to be good, or the players who we know are going to play at least, that's going to be one of the most important aspects of this camp.
Yeah, you're right, Matt. And where we're at quarterback is that you're not going to make it through this season with a run pass offense. In other words, the quarterback's going to get hit. He's going to run this RPO game. I mean, he'll probably get sacked. I mean, I think that's a given, right? So, and he's been injured before. So let's figure out who's the next one in line and the next one after that. And it was interesting. I have never heard a coach explain it this way. Sam yesterday said, we're really concentrating on the number three because that's where we have several players that we defined as being somewhat even. John Stephen Jones, Lucas Coley, and Cade Renfro, they're probably number three. So which one of those emerges in a short time, because that's all you've got is a short time, a week, who knows the offense the best, and then you can pit him against Lucas Coley to find out who your number two is. And it's probably, Malik Hornsby. Hornsby's probably the number two, but they want to really sharpen that position. So, because that's the, you know, you want to know who your number two and your number three. So that's what we've got in camp. And to see if KJ can, you know, run the offense, eliminate bad plays, eliminate turnovers, and understand the decision-making process against lots of different looks.
You mentioned the injuries, and you know, you think about, he started twice in his career and he got injured in both games. You know, the LSU game in 2019, he got knocked out, I think, with a concussion. 2020, and the Missouri game, he hurt his knee and was able to come back in and, you know, lead the team on that last drive. And of course, Arkansas lost on a walk-off field goal. But you know, staying healthy, that's something to watch for KJ Jefferson this year.
Yeah, and I think it even goes back to what Clay wrote about after this spring game. Like, after the spring, it was pretty much a given that KJ was your top guy. He was your QB1. So it's about the development of the guys behind him. Because like Clay said, like, this run pass option offense, like, your quarterback's going to take some shots. He's going to take some hits. Now, KJ, I think, is heady enough to know how to not take the big shot, but sometimes you just can't avoid that thing. But your backup quarterback, so he's a play away. And then when your second string guy is in, your number three guy is only one play away now. Who is your number three guy? You got to have somebody ready, prepared, that can step in, you know, just on a moment's notice, because things can turn on their head so quick in this league.
Clay, you wrote about it this week. We saw it at South Carolina in 2000 when they went through every quarterback on the roster.
That's right, Matt. It was incredible to, you know, see Robbie Hampton go down, and then Zach Clark, and then Jared McBride, and then they had to ask Robbie Hampton. I don't think he could throw. I think his shoulder was messed up. Could he go back and take some snaps and hand off and just get him through the game? And then they had, I think Robbie and Zach got him through the Auburn game, but that was it. They didn't have any more juice left in their battered bodies, and they brought John Rutledge off the intramural fields to play against Ole Miss, which was a sight to behold. I mean, it was the most incredible thing I could ever recall. And you don't forget that, you know, that season started with Gary Beshear's running out of the Walker Pavilion during wind sprints after a practice when it was obvious that he did not report in shape. And the good news is they feel like all their quarterbacks are in shape to start this season. I'm sorry.
You know, you mentioned Brashears, and you wrote that about a week ago about, you know, what can you learn from the first practice of the preseason, or even the first weekend? Because I don't feel like you can really learn just a whole lot. You got players out there. Are they even wearing pads? Maybe they're wearing their shoulder pads, but, you know, I mean, it's not much. You know, I think, Clay, you said it looks like they're in gym class. I think they look like they're wearing pants that I'd wear on my bicycle, you know, the tight spandex that barely comes up above your knees. I do remember, though, something that stood out to me, and these are little things, you know, that I think you can pick up on that may or may not go a big way. I remember in 2012 when they went from Bobby Petrino to John L. Smith, just noticing on the practice field that they didn't seem as disciplined. You know, the practices didn't seem as disciplined as they had been under Petrino, even, you know, before the motorcycle accident. He had, you know, taken them through some of their spring practice 4 or 5 months earlier. And, you know, there was that stark contrast. So, you know, I feel like maybe there are little things, you know, that you can pick up with the, you know, the coaches and how they lead practice and things of that nature. But, you know, what can we really take away from what we're going to see this weekend out there?
Yeah, I think in the first practice, you can notice, are they in condition? You know, what do they look like? You know, it's like you take away the pads. Well, what do you see? Well, you see the bodies, and you can see that, you know, they're ripped or they're not. You know, you can see the tummies. You can see, you know, or the guts, if that's what they have. So those are things that you look at that just kind of jump out at you. It's like, what kind of condition and shape are they? Are they moving good? Do they understand is there confusion? Are they organized? Do the coaches look like they're in charge? What's the body language? You know, all those things can tip you away. It may be that, you know, everything's fine and there's nothing, there's no telltale signs. I'm told that this team is really well conditioned. They've gained strength and weight. They'll be more defined. They'll look like football players are supposed to look like in the SEC, and it's a deeper roster where everything fits together the right way. The numbers are good. You won't see a short line here, you know, or a long line there. So I guess, if all of that is true, that'll be a positive after the first practice. Then the other thing that you see is, without question, you throw and catch on the first day. Can you throw and catch? And Scotty and I will take notes and look at each other after that 30 minutes of the first practice. How many balls did we see hit the ground? And, you know, I can remember, an experienced Clint Sterner going through a practice where no balls hit the ground, or a Ryan Mallett or a Tyler Wilson, no balls are hitting the ground. So, you know, pretty quickly, can these guys throw and catch? And because that's not playing real football. We're playing 7-on-7 today. So anyway, those are some clues of what to watch for.
Yeah, balls hitting the ground, you know, quarterbacks being sharp against air. Those are things that maybe you don't write about, you know, a lot, but those are definitely things that you keep your eye on. And, you know, something else, I think you mentioned maybe the pace of practice. Like, Sam places such a big emphasis on transitioning between, you know, from station to station, period to period. He said yesterday, you know, that's kind of, you know, you're bouncing around so much. If you're busting your tail to get from place to place, that's, you know, that's where you can kind of really get your conditioning, on top of, you know, going against guys. But, you know, I'm looking at Davion Warren too. I just think he's so important. Is he running? you know, maybe without, you know, a hitch in his giddy up, like Ketron Jackson's maybe another guy I'm keeping an eye on. So he wore, you know, he's had, I think he had a knee injury in the past and he was wearing a brace in the spring. I think the receiver position is just, is so big. And maybe those two guys, if they're running, you know, effortlessly, kind of fluidly, I think that'd be a big deal, a good place to start. And Clay mentioned, you can check out the body types. Like one of the things Sam's mentioned was that the defensive line had grown, I think he said, tremendously with their size, and he could talk all day and night about the strength gains and the weight gains. Zach Williams was a guy whose weight gains and his strength gains, I mean, they were noticeable in the spring. Like he looked like he belonged. And if you got more guys like that, that look like they belong, that's a big positive.
Switch gears here real quick, guys. This weekend also a big deal for Arkansas football because there's two former Razorbacks who are being inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton. Steve Atwater, the Razorback great safety, and Jimmy Johnson, who was on their 1964 national championship team. Going into the Hall of Fame, Atwater, of course, you know, the great safety for all those years with the Denver Broncos, won two Super Bowls. I think he played in eight Pro Bowls and 11 NFL seasons. Johnson, of course, a couple of Super Bowls. He rebuilt the Dallas Cowboys after taking over for Tom Landry. A lot of people forget he also took the Dolphins to the playoffs two or three times. And so interesting this week to watch them go in. And I think it's interesting, too, that, you know, if you look at the colleges that are represented at the Pro Football Hall of Fame, Arkansas is tied for 13th with five former players who are in there. And it's a little bit different for the former Arkansas players. You've got Jimmy Johnson in there as a coach. Jerry Jones obviously has gone in as an owner. But the Razorbacks are really well represented. And Clay, I know that you covered Atwater during his playing years here in Fayetteville, and you covered Jimmy Johnson when he was coaching at Oklahoma State and you were writing for the Tulsa World. What are some of your memories of covering those two?
Yeah, this is should be an entertaining weekend for these guys to make their induction speeches. And I'll start with Atwater. And so a lot of people forget that, you know, he came to Arkansas as a wishbone quarterback, great high school basketball player. They recruited him and told him they'd give him a chance to play quarterback. Of course, that didn't happen. He, you know, was quickly transitioned to safety, and he played safety like no one else in Arkansas history. He played 8 yards off the line of scrimmage and didn't get beat deep, which is almost an impossible thing to do. But it gave them an extra inside linebacker because, you know, as soon as he recognized run, he filled a gap, and they played a run fit defense that could never be blocked because they had an extra man in him. You know, and I think there were team after team that thought they could take advantage of the way he played as far as scheme in that Fred Goldsmith defense, but he never got burned. And people attacked him in the passing game. He dropped a lot of big interceptions. The reason why he didn't play wide receiver is he'll tell you he had the, what do they call it, hands of stone. And but yeah, he dropped one against Miami that in the end zone that would have closed out that game. And I've reminded him of that a couple of times, and he just drops his head because you know, Arkansas was poised to win that game, and then Miami kicked a field goal, I think a play or two later to win the game. Miami was on the goal line, threw it right to him in the end zone, and he just dropped it back of the end zone. So
it's one of the great got-away plays in Razorback history, I think.
Oh, yeah, no question. But Atwater was a physically gifted safety. I mean, he was bigger than linebackers, but could play and backpedal and cover. And then the thing that I always heard the coaches talk about is that he had the intellect to understand, because he played quarterback growing up, he understood at all times how the offense was trying to attack the defense, and he could read the plays and react in an instant so that he never gave up bad yardage. In other words, didn't take a false step. So it was, and then I'll switch over to Jimmy Johnson. Of course, I barely remember him as a player in 64. And my dad called him Jump Up Jimmy because he played nose tackle and he would make a play on the ground. And then he would jump up in one movement and raise both arms in the touchdown signal. And so that his teammates called him Jump Up Jimmy, Jump Up. And smartest guy on the field, a lot like Atwater, was always the smartest coach. Got to know him a little bit as a defensive coordinator at Arkansas, but more as a head coach at Oklahoma State. And one of the great thrills as a young reporter, he sat in the stands and supervised practice and invited me to sit with him for a few practices and listen to him and what they were trying to accomplish at Oklahoma State. They had a saying that he put in. It was kind of like, how about them Cowboys? And when he was at Dallas, but he said, how about them Cowboys at Oklahoma State too? And then his other constant was press on. And he'd hold up a number one finger and yell, press on. You know, they were trying to build something at Oklahoma State. I think he was the master builder. You know, he did that at Oklahoma State. He did that at Miami, you know, when he was the Hurricanes national championship coach. And he did that with the Cowboys, the ability to build. I think he's had people in all walks of life contact him about, you know, corporation CEO, about how to build things. And he's always been willing to share. I did an interview with him a few years ago, kind of covering the 50-year reunion of the 64 team. And what he told me was the key is to hire smart people. You hire dumb people, you're doomed. And he says, when he was out in recruiting, he'd tell assistant coaches, what is their intellect? What is their knowledge of football? And if they didn't have the right answer, he crossed them off his list.
I mean, you look at his list of assistants, he had some of the great assistants, I think, you know, on his staffs, either at Miami or with the Cowboys, guys like Dave Wannstedt and Butch Davis. And you can go on and on with the, you know, the assistant coaches that he had. I think it's kind of interesting. Jones, yep. Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of interesting too. You look at who he took over for in the NFL. He took over for Tom Landry and he took over for Don Shula and had, you know, success, maybe not as much in Miami as he did in Dallas, but, you know, had success in both places, taking over for, you know, filling shoes that were, you know, as big of a shoe as you could fill.
Yeah. He was incredible to watch. He was, like I said, he genius IQ. Everybody said it wouldn't have mattered what profession that he picked, that he would have been ultra successful because of his intellect. And, you know, he had a psychology degree. He always was working on the next angle, and you could see him position himself in the way he manipulated whatever the scenario. Just a brilliant, brilliant mind.
Jimmy Johnson's going to be presented by Troy Aikman in Canton. Kind of interesting that he recruited Troy whenever he was the head coach at Oklahoma State, and Troy was a quarterback in Henrietta.
Thought he had him.
Yeah, thought he had him, and Troy went on a recruiting visit to Barry Switzer in OU and ended up committing to the Sooners and playing there.
Broke
Steve
his
Atwater's.
Heart.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I've heard Jimmy Johnson say that he thought he had Troy Aikman a second time when he transferred from OU, and then Aikman ended up going to UCLA over Miami, and he finally got to coach him a third time with the Cowboys. Steve Atwater's going to be presented by his former Bronco teammate, Dennis Smith. Those inductions are going to begin Saturday night at 5:30. ESPN and NFL Network are going to televised the inductions. Of course, it's a little bit different. These are class of 2020 inductions being enshrined this year because of COVID last year interrupted it. We mentioned real quick, guys, five former Razorbacks are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Lance Allworth, Dan Hampton, Jerry Jones going in this weekend, Jimmy Johnson, and Steve Atwater. That's tied for 13th with programs like Texas, Oklahoma, Nebraska, Iowa. You know, really strong programs who've put in the NFL some strong professional players. Clay, if there was one Razorback who hasn't gone into the Pro Football Hall of Fame yet that you could put in, who would it be?
Well, this is this guy didn't even qualify for the NFL Hall of Fame, but I would put an asterisk by Wayne Harris's name and put him in the Hall. He's in the Canadian Football Hall of Fame.
He does qualify. He does qualify. It's the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It's not just the NFL.
That would be who I would put.
Yeah.
And the Thumper, the greatest linebacker in Arkansas history. And, you know, if you talk to people like Barry Switzer or Harold Horton, and you say who's the greatest player in Arkansas history, they'll talk about Allworth, and they'll talk about, you know, Dan Hampton, but they will come back to Wayne Harris over and over and over. And I would say Wayne Harris would be that guy. You know, there's some others. I think Wayne Martin, you know, might eventually be considered defensive tackle that played for New Orleans, you know, is high up on sack lists. So let me go back to Atwater's, the guy that's going to present him. It could be Bob Carver, because Bob was about Steve's closest friend through all the years. And if you saw Atwater come back to an Arkansas event, it would usually be with Bob Carver, the late car dealer from MENA. So I would just, you know, the friendship that those two guys had all the way through his NFL career is really, really unique.
Scotty?
Yeah, I think you mentioned this name to me earlier, Jason Peters. Like, I think there's a conversation there's a conversation to be had there. It'll be a short one because he deserves to be in there.
Two names before we get out of here. Pat Summerall, because of what he did in all those years with CBS and Fox Sports. And Jim Benton, great receiver in the 1930s and 40s when he retired from the NFL. He was the second all-time leading receiver in pro football history. We'll be back on Monday with another podcast. Until then, hope you visit us at wholehogsports.com for all of our coverage from Razorback preseason camp. For Clay Henry and Scotty Bordelon, I'm Matt Jones. Thanks for joining us.
The proceeding has been a production of wholehogsports.com. Look for our latest podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at wholehogsports.com for the latest news and commentary.